This is Podium Sundays, the podcast. Welcome to my new podcast. For some reason, a lot of you want to hear me talk more, which is cruel of you since I don't want to listen to my own voice anymore because it can make you slowly go insane by hearing your voice as much as I force myself to edit and listen to mine. But here we are, and I am giving you all what you want. I guess we'll start by giving you what you probably all want, which is my name. My first name is, drumroll please, Carolyn. Wow, look at you guys getting brand new information. In today's episode to kick off, I'm just going to answer some questions. Going down the line, I'm hoping to have some guests on my podcast, as well as go a little bit more in-depth dive into some history stories so you guys can get to know a little bit more about F1, and I'll do a little bit of research because I love a little history lesson. I know one of the first questions is, what is my F1 lore? My F1 lore is this. Think about me in Newport, Rhode Island. I'm living next door to my uncle's childhood best friend, and I get his Wi-Fi for free because who doesn't want free Wi-Fi? And his Wi-Fi goes down while he's in Florida. So I have to resort to downloading tons of episodes on Netflix. I decide to download Drive to Survive because my mom was obsessed with it at the time. And I was like, okay, fine, I will give it a try. What could be so excited about men driving around in circles? You know, what wasn't exciting about that? It was incredible. It was thrilling. What people don't understand, I think, especially with people who get into Drive to Survive, is in Europe, F1 is a lot more common and available. Whereas in America, there's really no concept to get into it unless you're living in certain places or your family members know F1. It's just not a very accessible sport. And the only racing sport I knew of was NASCAR. I'm from New England, so it's just NASCAR is not a super accessible sport to me anyway. And unless you watch it, you won't really understand. So I never gave it a try, and I never gave F1 or really knew. I knew who Lewis Hamilton was. I will say that. I knew Lewis Hamilton was one of the best. I knew Michael Schumacher was considered the best. So that is all the things I knew about F1, is I had seen Lewis Hamilton on Graham Norton. So I watched Drive to Survive. I become obsessed with Charles Leclerc, as one does. And because I wasn't in a great place with my career, I was planning on changing from coaching because I was burnt out. I just put all of my energy into being obsessed with F1. Then the Fernando and Taylor Swift rumors came out, which obviously are hysterical and iconic. And my friend at the time, who was also obsessing with F1 with me, I wanted to make her a meme. So I created a TikTok, and that's how it kind of jumped off from there. There was one video I took of Charles Leclerc where David Coulthard was like, oh, Charles Leclerc's eyes are so stunning and magnificent. And so I posted that on TikTok and it got like 300,000 views. And so it was like, okay, well, maybe we should try something if we can have that kind of video go that big. So we just kind of started testing things and seeing how it went. And then we had a few videos that did really big numbers and we kind of took off from there. And then I ended that friendship, or I should say she ended that friendship. So we deleted that original account, and then I started up Podium Sundays, and it all went from there. So let's get into some questions. First guest you'd like to have if you have an opportunity to talk with them. I would go with my boy, Fred Vasseur, obviously. As much as I'd liked it to be Carlos Sainz or Lewis Hamilton, I think I would be so terrified that I would need to like get a rhythm before I jumped into anyone else. And I think practice makes perfect. So I feel like Fred has that vibe that I could be silly with him and have fun conversation and dive into some of the deeper topics, but I think he would just be a laugh to have. And I think it would be more comfortable than immediately jumping into like the people who I'm obsessed with. There's an intimidation factor that I think is a little lower for Fred because he just seems to want to have a good time most of the time. So I would enjoy talking to Fred, and I want to know every single detail about what is happening at Ferrari right now. Every single detail. I had a lot of questions about the Red Bull situation. I also had this question, which was, what do you think it takes to change the cursed perception of the second Red Bull seat? So I think there's a few things about Red Bull that have issues. I don't necessarily think that they're specifically designing the car for Max Verstappen. I believe that because Max Verstappen has suited the car so well that they were able to continue down the path that they were on. And now the path that they've taken, which has suited Max, is beginning to have gone way too far away from a very drivable car. And that's why it's continued to get worse and worse for the second driver, because their skill set isn't the same as Max. And also they don't drive that specific way. As we're now seeing, he can't drive it. They now have to address the problem. And that's not saying Max can't drive it. He's obviously doing it still spectacularly well, but it's now hindering his ability to perform at the highest level, which is getting podiums, which is winning for him. If he can't get in P1, that's a problem for Max. How do you think they can change the perception of the second Red Bull seat? I think first off, they need to stop talking about their drivers as much in the press. I think you can look at Zach Brown, you can look at Toto Wolff, you can look at James Vowles. They defend their drivers for a pretty long time. And, you know, there's occasional things where it starts popping in and occasional conversations, but they're far more willing to just, you know, give the PR answer. And that doesn't seem to be the case with Helmut Marko saying the PR answer or Christian Horner. So I think that's an added part, because you're like, if you're saying this to the press, what are you saying behind closed doors? And I think clearly their cutthroat attitude isn't working for them anymore. Yes, sports are cutthroat. Absolutely. The problem with focusing on just having a cutthroat culture and not on changing and evolving and growing, and just that your culture is like, well, you know, you either sink or swim, it doesn't focus on the things that you need to do and building up your drivers and creating a supportive environment. I think it's this crazy thing where people think that tearing people down is the best way to get a performance. And yeah, I will say that can be true. I am one of those athletes who like needed to be bullied a little bit, and my coach bullied the hell out of me to push me. But I'm one of the rare people who that worked for. It doesn't actually work for a lot of people. People have different motivations, and the thought that everyone's motivation is being put under extreme pressure and seeing if they sink or swim, that's not the case, right? And you can see that throughout the drivers and how they do and how they've evolved. But I think when you look at, you know, teams that are willing to change, you look at Mercedes, they've been willing to change. And, you know, Mercedes has grown a little bit without having Lewis Hamilton. They've had to figure things out and adjust, and George Russell has stepped into that role well, and Kimi Antonelli is doing a great job. But at the same time, Lewis Hamilton is enjoying performing again, is enjoying racing again at Ferrari, despite some struggles with their car, but he is also enjoying it. So both teams are doing better in some ways because they were willing to change. And the fact that Red Bull is unwilling to change this culture about their second driver is such a massive red flag that is antithetical to sports, to be unwilling to change. Sports is about evolving, especially F1. F1 is about the constant need to change and evolve the car. You look at the drivers and they've gone through exceptional change. You look at where Lewis started, you look at where Max started, and you see how much they've grown. Sport is about changing. So the fact that Red Bull is holding on so fiercely to being unwilling to change, that's why they're on a losing trajectory, because change is inevitable in sports, in everything, but in a sport that is about constant evolution. The lack of change by Red Bull is the thing that is destroying them. And they deserve to be destroyed if they're unwilling to adjust their mindset, their car, the way they run their team, because you have to evolve. That's one of the reasons I left coaching, was I didn't want to learn anymore. I wasn't excited to find a new way to help my athletes. And that is destructive. That's awful. It wasn't fair to my athletes for me not to want to change for them, not to want to be better. You have to want to be better every single day in sports. And a desire to not be willing to change everything to make your team better, you're failing as a leader. That's it. That's all it is. Every single coach that is winning championships is always talking about, what do I do tomorrow to be better? Every single day, right? And we look at Red Bull and they're in a place of stagnation where they're on their back heels and they're not trying to fundamentally change parts of themselves. And that will destroy any team, any team. You look at what, you know, look at the New England Patriots. They were able to win for a very long time with Tom Brady. And then when he was gone, the issues they had, which had always been there and they never changed, and they weren't able to sustain what they used to do without an extreme amount of talent. So if Max is gone, what do we think happens at Red Bull? They can't sustain what they've created so far because it's unsustainable. There's the part where there's what a driver can do with the car and what they can't do, right? And as we've seen now with Checo, the car became to be too unmanageable for him. And with Liam Lawson, it wasn't even manageable at all. And we'll see how that goes for Yuki. But being a good manager is taking responsibility for the things you've done. And there's been an extreme lack of taking responsibility from Horner and Marco addressing these kinds of situations, right? Like, there isn't a big talk, like there is now, oh, we have to fix a car, but where was this last year? Like, where was this attitude last year? It was all like, you know, if Checo's got to figure it out and not, you know, we have to make sure we're helping him get things going, right? And other teams are doing better at making it feel like we are a team. And Red Bull is very much feeling like we're a team for Max, and the second driver is on an island by themselves and have to figure out if they're going to sink or swim. And that is not a great experience. And they're also not committing to developing a driver, right? They've forgotten how long it took Max to become a championship driver, right? They committed the time and effort into Max because they saw that he's had the longevity to become a talented driver, but they haven't pretty much committed to anyone in the same way at all. And now they're learning their lesson. They have to commit. You have to choose a driver and you have to help them and you have to build them up and you have to support them, because now we've seen, look, Alex Albon, when given a good car, can drive very well. Pierre Gasly, when the Alpine is a good car, he can get it on a podium. So we've seen what they are capable of doing, which exists, and they threw them out before the opportunity to actually grow and develop. I think the sports are cutthroat. Bro, I used to rip my own skin off my leg my senior spring in rowing. I know sports are supposed to be cutthroat. My coach kicked me out of a boat to piss me off. I've been in the most cutthroat environment. There has to be backing. The cutthroat has to work, right? That's where we're at. You can be cutthroat if you win, right? If you back that up with actually getting the result that you want. The problem with where Red Bull is right now is they're not in a position to be successful. You can be cutthroat when you win. But this is a consequence of cutthroat. It can work for a time, but it eventually blows up in your face because people leave. People don't want to be in that environment anymore because it's unsustainable. It is an unsustainable culture to have because it eventually bites back. And that's why you see teams go on a run for a few years and then fall off the cliff, because you eventually get to a point where people are like, this isn't worth it anymore. You have to have people willing to continue to support that culture. And there becomes a point when it's just like, this isn't worth it. You hear the rumor that both Carlos and Alex were offered the second Red Bull seat and they both declined it to stay at Williams. Clearly, they would rather build a team and be part of a team that is evolving and changing than play second fiddle to Max Verstappen and be in a culture that is unhealthy, because it destroys you. Being in an unhealthy environment, it is exhausting and it sucks every part of you out and it destroys your confidence and all of those things. And it's, why would you choose that over, maybe you don't win as many races, but maybe you stay, your career is longer. Maybe you get another chance on a great team, but you stay in one piece. And I think sometimes people forget that, like, you still have to sleep at night. We will see a big issue with Max Verstappen, because if Red Bull doesn't have the car and they're also doing all this nonsense on the side with drivers he likes, with drivers he thinks are talented enough, what, you know, he doesn't have to be there. If the car's not good enough, why would Max stay, right? If he can go to Mercedes. Like, imagine him in the Mercedes right now. The Mercedes is one of the best cars on the grid. And imagine Max in that car. Like, if Max was in the Mercedes, they'd be leading the championship. I will bet that Max will not be in the 2026 Red Bull unless major changes go. Because the fact that it's getting so loud how unsatisfied Max is, he has no reason to stay. And nothing looks like it's turning. And nothing looks like it's dramatically changing. So why would he stay? So I'm going to call it. I would love to see Max Verstappen in the Mercedes. I would be curious who Toto would get rid of. I mean, it'd probably be Kimi and try and maneuver him into the Williams or maneuver him somewhere else and see how that goes. But I can also see if Max Verstappen gets really angry with the FIA and Red Bull, if he's just like, I'm out. And like takes a year off or something and sees how the engine changes goes. After that Red Bull rant, we have a deep question. His biggest regret in life. I'm not a very regretful person just because I think it's a waste of energy. And having been an athlete, it's like you only have what you do from this moment on to change, right? Like all you can do is change what's happening now and what's going into the future, and holding on to things that you didn't do is not a super healthy way to live your life. But I did work for an abusive coach at one of the universities I was at, and I regret not being more vocal. I regret not risking more in terms of standing up for myself and for the athletes that I worked for, because I allowed things to happen because I could adjust myself to fix them. There were a lot of things that were hypocritical about him. There were a lot of times he had unacceptable behavior, and I should have said a lot more. And I regret that, but I think it's that position where your entire career is on the line. You're in a sport where it's a really small community, as anyone who knows who's in a sport that has a small community, like everyone knows each other. So if you make one person angry, they can destroy your entire career. Our higher up boss, like, didn't really, I once met with him about some of the issues, and he was like, well, when I talk to him, he gets really angry and upset, and he doesn't really take the criticism well. And I'm like, well, that doesn't mean you shouldn't tell him he can't throw a chair at practice. That coach caused really, really big problems, and I should have done more. And that is a regret, because it hurt my athletes, it hurt myself. And at some point you have to decide what's more worth it, right? Like, you have to stand for something or you stand for nothing. And when I eventually heard the worst of it, I did stand up, and I'm proud of how I handled it and what happened, but I should have been better, that it should never have gotten to that point. So that's my biggest regret, is I should have been saying a lot more. But that's also how the challenges of having a bad culture are. The people who are seeing the bad things happen have a really challenging decision to make. And I come from a background where I am very privileged and still didn't feel comfortable enough to say, hey, this isn't okay. You know, I could have lost my job and been okay, and I still didn't until it was far, far gone, right? But that's also being a woman in a male environment, right? Of feeling like if I speak up and say something, then I'm going to do harm to myself in my career. And that sucks. And so I will say that, I don't envy anyone in that position. It is so hard to decide to do it. And especially now, as I'm in my 30s, it's a lot easier to look back and be like, I should have done more. But when you're 25 and, you know, I should never have been in the position in the first place. And it was a failure of the school to not have been better in so many ways. So many ways they should have been better. And I should have never been put in that position. And they should have managed me. And they should have spoken to me. And they should have allowed avenues when abuse is happening for it to be easier and better to report. So that's my biggest regret. Because it harmed other people, me failing to not do more. But the fault for the damage that was caused is predominantly in the head coach, who harmed emotionally the athletes that I worked with and caused a lot of damage and almost cost a kid their life. To anyone who's in that position, I am so sorry that you're put in that position. Talk to someone, find ways in which you can try and report it, put it in writing. To anyone who is in a situation, get it in writing. If you have a coach who is not doing and saying the things they should be, get it in writing. Moving on to something more fun. Someone asked, what is your best sports memory and why? The 1999 Women's World Cup was fundamental in making me an athlete and making me want to think about going into sports. I wanted to be a professional soccer player because seeing strong, beautiful, talented women be rewarded for their skills and for their work and seen at an exceptional level, you know, Mia Hamm being in Gatorade commercials with Michael Jordan, you know, it was like, oh, you know, we can be this awesome. We can do all of these things. So that fundamentally put me on a path of being a, you know, wanting to be in sports. And I did do a podcast with my cousin about it. So I will add it on this chain of podcasts so you can hear kind of the silliness and the joy about what it was like watching that 1999 Women's World Cup team win, because there is nothing that's seared into my memory more than sitting in front of that TV panicking that they might lose, because it was so big in our minds and felt so inevitable that watching penalty kicks, my uncle's like, they could lose. And we're like, shut up. How dare you suggest that they could ever lose? I'll leave that on this thread and you can learn about and hopefully laugh, because my cousin Julie and I have some good banter about what that experience was like. Yeah, and I will end this episode with, it may be obvious, but I really want to hear what motivates you with your content, but also in general. I enjoy creating every day, and that's one of the reasons I also left coaching, is I felt like there was a whole part of my brain not being used in terms of creativity, that I feel like I'm a very creative person and I needed to be using that more. And I just felt like I was only using a part of my brain to coach and not all of me to be as successful as I wanted to be. So being able to create something every day that's new, that's different, you know, excites me. And some videos I think are better than others. And then there are some videos that I think are my absolute best work, and I'm so proud of them, and whatever happens, happens. As much as I wish some of my best videos did better, I also get to just look at it and be like, that is the pinnacle of my work, and I'm proud that I got to create it. I think what motivates me as well is, I was talking to someone else about this, but to be a good rower, you really have to understand that the only way to beat someone is to be your best self. That's the only way to beat anyone, right? There's not really defense in rowing. There's only offense. There's only throwing things out and trying to see what they respond with. But you're in your own lane, you have your oar, and that's the only thing that you can change. And in that way, what you're really competing against is you being your best, is you being the absolute best version of yourself on that day to throw out against someone else and see if your best can compete with their best. And that's it. And that is one of the things that allows you as an athlete and as a person to be okay with bad results, because if you're your best version and you threw out the best race you could, then at the end of the day, what happened is what happened. And that has certainly got me through some tough losses, because you have to be willing to know that, like, you did absolutely everything you could. So when I look at content creation, I see this a lot with other creators talking about competition. And I'm just like, I don't have competition with everyone else. Because first off, I'm doing something different visually and all that, so the algorithm dictates certain things in its own way. But the person I'm competing against is myself and the next best video I create. That's what I'm competing against. Because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what anyone else does if I don't make a video, right? Like, this all can come crumbling down if I don't make another video. So if I'm not in my healthiest place, if I'm not in my mentally best place, then that's going to make me not be creative. That's not going to make me allowed to be funny and hilarious and, you know, create things that people enjoy if I am not in my best place. What motivates me is that's the only way for me to have a bigger page. The only way for me to grow my following and to have more opportunities is to make better and more videos. That's it. And the only way for me to make better and more videos is to be the best version of myself. And so that's what I think about and how I motivate myself. So if you like this podcast, give it a rating, give it a comment. If you want me to answer certain questions, DM me. I'm happy to answer whatever you guys want to know. And I really am very grateful for so many of you. I get so many nice comments about how much people like my content and like what I have to say. And it means the world to me that I get to make people laugh about silly jokes that I make. So I'm really grateful to all of you, and I hope you have a great day.